Good morning and welcome to the Monday call brought to you by NZ Funds. I'm Stefan Clark, Chief Client Officer at the firm. The accounting profession plays a critical role in the New Zealand economy by providing transparent financial reporting, audits, tax compliance, and advice. These services enable organisations and investors to make informed decisions and improve performance, with the profession's expertise and stewardship major contributors to shaping the commercial and investment landscape. However, the accounting sector is undergoing profound change, driven by new technologies, shifting regulations, growing complexity, and evolving client demands. Accountants need to embrace these changes and to innovate. This morning, we explore this dynamic sector with special guests, Matt Vincent, CEO of W. Vincent Associates and Chair of the NZ CPA Public Practice Committee, Scott Mason, Senior Partner at Findex, Professional Director and Chair of the New Zealand Chartered Accountants Australia and New Zealand Tax Advisory Group, and Andrea Waters, CFO at NZ Funds. We'll discuss the underlying trends fueling the changes, examine the opportunities new technologies offer, and explore how societal expectations have moved, along with other topics. Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining. It's very exciting to have you here, and we're hoping this will become the beginning of an accountant series on the Monday call. Just to kick things off, I thought I would just build up a little bit of a picture for our listeners about the role of the accounting industry. And I covered a little bit of it in the introduction, but it is a very significant sector. And I think total revenue, last I read, was around $2.3 billion in New Zealand, which is a huge contributor. And of course, there's big firms, little firms, and medium-sized firms. And last I heard, Westpac conducted a survey across Australia and New Zealand, and accountants were identified as the most trusted profession of all the professions developed economies or our developed economies have. So a very, very important part of the New Zealand economy. And so with that, against that backdrop, let's kick off with you, Scott. Tell me, how is it that you, and over your time in the profession, how has it changed in the role of accountants? How has it shifted? And where do you think it going? And obviously, Matt, as Scott's chatting about it, feel free to chime in.
Thanks, Stefan. And probably to give a little bit of context as to my career, and I promise not to take the whole hour on that. I've always been in public practice, which is mainly the topic of today's conversation. I had some experience in Big Four in New Zealand and overseas, but chose to end up in a medium-sized sort of accounting firm environment in the South Island. And that was mostly around the nature of the relationship with the clients and how much I enjoyed a direct relationship versus perhaps advising tax managers in a large corporate, which didn't spin my wheel. So that's a little bit of background. And as you can probably tell, I'm probably much older than Matt, so I've been doing that for 30-odd years. So over that time, I think that the role in some ways has changed, but it hasn't changed. I think the way we fulfill the role has changed. I think we should have always been the trusted advisor. I think we should always been at the shoulder of our clients. I think we should always been relieving them of the burden of doing stuff that's not naturally easy for them to do. But I think at times as a profession, we got tied up in doing, as opposed to taking that stepping back. And I think technology is coming along. We're going to talk about technology a lot today, but technology is coming along and forcing us to reconsider perhaps the easy option that we took over that period of time. Maybe that's a starting gambit, Matt.
Yeah. I guess in terms of my career, probably half as long as Scott's so far, but in that time I've seen, I guess some changes start to materialise and gain a little bit of momentum. So my background is business advisory services. So working with SMEs in terms of helping them with their compliance requirements or any business advisory requirements that they have. And what I've seen, or the biggest standout for me in terms of the change in the industry is has been with the tech and the way that accountants have been more processing in terms of the work that they do, to now actually being able to step back and look at the numbers and ask their clients better questions about what are they trying to achieve to become advisors. We've always done, the industry has always done advisory well, I believe, and that, I don't think that'll change, but it's always been reactive advisory. It's when the client has come to you with a need. And I think where we're starting to see a shift in the industry, which is quite an exciting shift, is we're starting to move into more proactive advisory. So tech and other influences on the industry are enabling us to free up some capacity and time and actually say, okay, well, what can we do to help our clients? What are their pain points? What do they need from their accountant? Where can we add more value? And it's a really exciting time to be an accountant.
That shift from compliance to advisory is probably, if you had to summarize, the big change. Is my understanding of the big change of the last 20 years, is that a fair reflection, or do you think there's another way of framing it?
Yeah, I would probably would say that advisory has always been there, but the proactive advisory, where it's not just about a client comes to you with a need, say the banks ask for a cash flow forecast, and you're like, okay, we need to do a cash flow forecast. It's flipped on its head, where you sit down with your client and say, hey, we should probably do a cash flow forecast with your budgeting this year to see if you're going to have any cash pitfalls or if there's any levers we can pull in your business to enable you to hopefully have some more cash in your bank account. So that's kind of the shift that I'm seeing, is rather than reactive, it's moving to more proactive services.
I think that's a degree of balance. I remember having these conversations back in 1996, 1997, talking about the threat to the profession of the technology and having to evolve, and, you know, probably cast myself a bit of a naysayer in that regard. And to be fair, I've always been on the consulting side of the business as opposed to the nuts and bolts. So I've probably had a jaundiced view. But I just think the technology has released and allowed us to take those steps when maybe it wasn't our natural game. I don't think for a long time our training, the way we were educated, really set us up for that. You know, most of the training I did, you know, when I went through my qualifications was quite focused on, the nuts and bolts of accounting and what you should be doing, rather than that stepping back. And I do think that as we've created that time and space, we've been able to invest more time in our people and allow them to broaden their horizons. And I think the way the degrees are structured has certainly improved. And the way the EE Institute has structured its own education, again, has tried to sort of lift the bar.
Yeah, brilliant. So what you're saying is that if the emphasis has shifted to more advisory, proactive advisory now, and does that mean then that the skills accountants need to build out to be effective accountants has shifted, or is it just a natural transition from one to the other?
I'll jump in on that one if you want, Scott, to start off with. Yeah, I think there's a significant shift in skill sets required, especially in my part of the industry, where you know, accountants are processing, they're getting the tax position right, they're making sure that a file is complying with the relevant legislation, etc. That's a different skill set to then looking at a set of financial statements and going, what are the problems or challenges in this business? What are the levers that the client could pull to get a better outcome? And then how can we articulate that to them in a way that they can understand and then action and execute on some of our suggestions? But also adding to that is we can't just go out there and prescribe. We need to ask and understand. And I think we have been, the industry has been such great advisors over time that we're good at telling people what to do, but we're not that great at asking them what they're trying to achieve or what they want. So there's definitely a skill shift required in the industry. And I don't believe that'll just happen naturally. I think that's going to require investment from businesses and to their team and their people to help them lift their skills to start advising in that at that new level.
Look, I think actually you touch on an interesting point there, Matt. And there's some really interesting stuff in a book around called The Future of the Professions by the two Siskins out of the UK, I think they are. And one of the things they talk about is, in many ways, the mindset of our profession and how we set ourselves up over a very, very long time, not 30 years, not 50 years, but hundreds of years, as gatekeepers of information. And how we sort of created this sort of ethos of being the font of all knowledge, and therefore it was more, I tell you what to do, we don't have a conversation. And in our modern society, and as we've evolved, that's no longer appropriate. And, you know, some have moved quicker than others in that regard. And I think at the very heart of the advisory relationship is that openness and sharing of information freely to actually educate our clients, to empower them and enable them to make decisions rather than tell them what the answer is. And if you can take that step and then apply that within your practice, and all of a sudden the relationship with your team changes as well. And if you can get your head around the fact you don't have to be the person who knows everything, then even the fundamentals of those two relationships change, and that's the beginning of an advisory practice.
One of the things that we see within our business, and I think when you're working with an industry, is a drive for more data analytics that then drive those insights, which I guess builds on the technology element and the ability to build those data sets. Is that something you see, Matt, within how you serve your clients?
Yeah, I guess it's definitely... it's starting to evolve more in that space. It's not something that we are, I guess, proficient in doing. But what we're starting to see now in terms of, I guess, data across our client base, most of our clients are on cloud-based tech such as Xero. But being able to access all of that data in one point and being able to see what clients are in overdraft, what clients are having cash flow problems, what clients' gross profit margins are moving or their net profit margins are moving in one place, means you're able to then, again, be proactive and go, well, actually, I've got a segment of clients here that have been in overdraft for 2 years. Maybe they've got a cash flow problem. So let's actually get in front of those people and market to them in terms of education-based marketing to say, hey, this is what cash flow is about. These are the levers that you can pull to improve it, leave it there if you need to, or if they want to engage with you for more services, then the door's open. But that's how I guess we're using the data. We have it all there in the cloud, but it's been able to actually pull that down and put it into something that's useful for you as a practitioner to then say, okay, what are my clients' problems and challenges? How can I educate them on how to solve these problems? And then building a marketing initiative, and we do it around education-based marketing to take them from they don't know what they don't know to they know they don't know it, and then they're going to ask you for help.
Is it fair to say, Matt, that the availability of data on a timely basis has shifted your perspective from looking backwards to looking forwards?
Definitely.
Absolutely, and that's something we see too with technology now. You can get the data and the numbers so much quicker, which really does, it's that real-time information, isn't it? Mm. Gone are the days where you close out a month end and then it's a month later that you have the numbers.
It's quite scary. I remember when I first started, you would catch up with a client, you know, 6, 8, sometimes 12 months after balance date, and that's the first time they've had an indication of how they're going. And you're like, well, we're so far down past when you kind of closed off your books that you're waiting for us to kind of tell you, hey, you've done well or you haven't done well. So I think having that real live data, you can actually be way more proactive and get in front of your clients and helping them understand how they're doing. I think sometimes the barometer for success is how much money I've got in the bank account, whereas there's levers that your businesses can pull that they're just not aware of, and that's where, as accountants, we have a real role to play there to help educate them around what we're seeing in the numbers.
Do you think that one of the turning points was the introduction of GST and forcing businesses to start thinking about their cash flows and what was happening in their businesses on a more regular basis? I mean, supported by technology, but do you think that was a moment in time that sort of changed the ethos and the expectation?
I'll be honest with you, Scott, GST has always been in since I was an accountant.
I set myself up for that, didn't I?
So that tipping point, I probably can't comment too much on that tipping point. I think though, you know, we do a lot of work with our clients around the GST, where it's, they can just, one, get you to do the GST return for them, or two, you can wrap around a service around that to help educate them on their numbers and what you're seeing. So I could see how it is a tipping point, because then you're looking at the data on a more regular basis, and being able to say, well, how are things going, or things aren't going that well, or things are going great, what can we do to provide some more value or some extra service here?
We're going to jump into technology and a little bit more into the role of accountants soon. But before that, it's fair to say accountants, particularly now that real-time data is available, often have the best information and advanced information about where the economy, at least through their clients, is going. So I thought it'd be valuable if we just sort of touch on business environment today. And what do you see as the biggest challenges that your clients are currently facing? And are there any opportunities that you feel are not being picked up on in today's world? Scott, we'll kick off with you.
Look, I think one of the real challenges for most business owners right now is just the sheer complexity of their environment. And it's just so much noise, whether it's regulation from a government perspective, it's the requirements of banks, it's the requirements from their suppliers and their customers, the complexity of employment relationships, is health and safety. I mean, it's just coming at them from every direction. And they got into business, particularly in our respective client bases, Matt, they got into business because they're really passionate and really good about doing one thing. And irrespective of the industry, you know, that's something that's what they got in there to do. And I think that the challenge is how we create an environment that they can do what they're really, really good at and get supported in the other stuff. Because at times I think it just feels really overwhelming. And then you chuck on the top of that pressures of tight cash flow and significant market shifts, governments tinkering in marketplaces, changing things overnight. So I think it's just the sheer noise that they're trying to deal with, and the number of roles they have in their business. You know, most of these companies, even, you know, where it's Ma and Pa running a company with 10 employees, you know, they are the CEO, the CFO, the CTO, the CMO, the CIO, they're everything, right? And they can't be, because no one's naturally good at everything. So it's the role of the trusted advisor to relieve them. And that's not doing everything. That the trusted advisor could be looking for those opportunities to introduce them to others who can help them. And I think that's the biggest challenge right now.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think being a business owner myself, you know, there's so many changes in legislation, the Privacy Act, anti-money laundering, those kind of things that are coming at me as a business owner that I know are happening to other business owners as well. And, you know, I didn't get into business to worry too much around anti-money laundering or the Privacy Act, but you have to. So it's helping clients with those frustrations. But also to add to your question there, Stefan, around the environment and the data being available, that the test for me comes with, across our client base, is the third installment of provisional tax, which is the 7th of May. Because you're either writing that one up or writing that one down or keeping it the same. And that's based on how clients are trading. And, you know, there was this, I remember in the COVID years, we were cranking everybody's tax up. It was just businesses were going gangbusters, which was not expected. And then after COVID, which was for the year ending 31 March 23, we were writing everybody's tax down. And then we're coming back round to this circle again of another financial year down the track at 7th of May. We're finding now that our clients' taxes are balancing out a little bit. So to me, they've had this COVID high, and then it's plateaued probably back to pre-COVID levels, and it's starting to level out in the environment? Is that's the intel that I'm getting from the data inside our client base. So in terms of being early to that information, when I first thought about that question, I was like, are we that early? But we are actually. That information doesn't get filed until another 12 months after 31 March. So we do have access to that relatively quickly, and that's what I'm seeing in our client base anyway.
And are there pockets of, I guess, within some sectors are doing it harder than others? We know that retail is having a really hard time. But others might be having an easier time. Property development is obviously having a difficult time too. Are you seeing pockets of opportunity or people changing how they're operating to grab opportunities that you weren't expecting?
I think one of the structural changes to the economy that happened through COVID was that the broad theme of everybody doing well or everybody doing poorly was more common. But COVID has somehow changed things. There's more winners and losers. And the challenge within our client base is working out which is which. And you're quite right. I mean, in consumer durable, hospitality, construction at the moment is pretty tough, but there's some support services that are doing well. But even within those little sectors, there's little hotspots of actually doing quite well. So I think understanding the data per client becomes more and more important because we're less able to rely on just those general themes. I mean, we know we purposely crashed the economy. That was the intent of the monetary policy to do that. We were very successful at that. We should pat ourselves on the back, and now we're going to pick up the pieces. But I think the pieces are allocated in a slightly random way, which is more challenging for advisors.
Yeah, I tend to agree. We've got, I think, 40% of our client base is in construction and the trades, and there are polls in terms of how they're doing. Some have had record years, and then some are ready to close the doors. So I do think that you do hear those general themes come through, but as an advisor, when you're looking at your clients, it's definitely a case-by-case basis.
Which is interesting, because then that goes to how you manage your business and the people that you've got working in partnership with you, of course, and how you pull the levers available to you. Which brings me to my next question, which is how then does it translate to you and your business? If your clients are having a hard time, do you change the way you operate? Or if they're having a good time, does that change the way you operate? Or is it that the services are available and you can kind of just grind it out under either scenario?
Yeah, I think in an accountancy firm like mine, Business Advisory, you're generally, I feel we're busier when businesses are struggling because they are more likely to reach out for help and support compared to when they're going well. So we found that when we had the COVID crisis, we were able to get some services from an organisation that we're affiliated with called The Gap, and they built a great service called a business continuity plan and a delivery guide on how to deliver that. So we marketed that to our clients, and then we did a lot of that work. It was funded by NZTE, which really helped our clients as well. But through that period, we were so busy, but it definitely gave you a great sense of purpose to be an accountant, because people were stressed out and they were coming to you for support. So you had to be there and you had to be informed and you had to be able to help them navigate the troubled waters. So I've always found that when times are tough, we seem to get a lot busier. And then when times are good and there's money in the client's bank and things are cruising well for them, to me, I'm like, well, you should always fix the roof when the sun is shining. But a lot of times clients don't do that. And then it's not until it starts to rain that they go, okay, well, I've got some holes or I've got some leaks in my business that I need to fix. So we really try to educate our clients, especially in the good times, about making sure that you are setting yourselves up to be sustainable for when we have a cyclical downturn, because they they happen all the time. So, I feel that for my firm in particular, we tend to go better when things are worse in terms of doing work and more purpose-driven work, which is an interesting business model, because generally it would be the other way around.
Yeah, look, I think you've nailed it there, Matt. I think we're best on the shoulders. The stream's really good and really bad, and it does sort of tend to dip over and look back over time in those sort of middle periods. I think that in the good times as a profession, we've missed a lot of opportunity. You know, fix the roof when it's sunny, but that was the best time to talk about succession. That was the best time to talk about refining the business and perhaps looking at how to package up for exit and those sorts of things, and repay debt and moderate consumer spending and all those sorts of things. But we find those conversations at times hard to have. So I think we leave a lot of value on the table in the good times. And for that reason, and when it's tough and there's necessity, and necessity is the mother of innovation, as they say, there is a lot more sort of activity.
A topic I know is dear to your heart, Scott, is the role of accountants in helping emerging businesses grow and thrive from younger, I guess, earlier in their days and then moving up. What roles do accountants currently play, and what should they be doing more in this regard?
Yeah, look, as you said, Stefan, I've got quite a big client base in the early stage company sector, a lot of tech companies, and it's because it's a passion, not because we make a lot of money out of it. By their very nature, a lot of them are bootstrapping. They don't have a whole lot of money to spend on professional services. And the view I've always taken is try to identify the winners and then support them. And when I say winners, I probably mean the individuals rather than the ideas at times. I've certainly been involved with early stage companies where I thought maybe this idea is not the one, but this person is going to do something special. And really try and support them in terms of helping them learn vicariously rather than learning by bashing their head into the walls or falling into the potholes in front of them. But it's a challenging balance, because our strengths are our weaknesses, and if their strengths is that they see the world through rose-tinted glasses, they see the world with optimism. Otherwise, they wouldn't try to take on the world like they do. Then they also don't see that the tough things coming, and in some ways our roles to guide them, because we're lucky. We've been around for a while. We've been involved in hundreds and thousands of businesses. We've seen what can happen. But it's striking that balance around guiding without dampening their spirit. But also, from a financial perspective, it's quite challenging. And you couldn't have a whole practice of them, because you'd go broke.
I tend to agree with Scott there that, I think when people come into business, the glasses are rose tinted, and my new to business customers, I have a mindset that I share with them called the 10 hats. Because generally what they've been doing is working with one hat on in a particular business or industry. That may be sales or that may be operations, but then they've got the marketing, they've got the product service, they've got the finance, they've got the leadership, the directorship, the HR. All of these hats come on to business owners, and it's quite a daunting task to step out of a role into a business. And what gets them through is their desire and drive and motivation. And we at DVA, we always want to support those clients, but bootstrapping, there's not a lot of funds to go around to pay for our services. So what we try and have at DVA is a free offering across most of our services. And that could be, we have what we call a 10-minute quick query service, where you can pick up the phone and give us a call. As long as it's kind of circa within 10 minutes, you'll never pay a fee. But we do lots of education-based marketing and events to educate them on being new to business, or cash flow management, or 7 ways to grow your business, so that they can actually just engage and feed off that knowledge that we have for free, to help them kind of start to build up their knowledge around what it takes to run a successful business. And then ultimately, they'll see you in a different light. Hey, this is someone that can really help me. And then they will search for the funds to invest with you to sit alongside them in their business. But I feel you really need to have an education offering for them to sink their teeth into before they start to get into to pay.
I think it's just a long game, right? And you just got to understand, and you'll win some, you'll lose some, but it's the right thing to do. It's investing back into your community.
Okay. Andrea mentioned earlier about insights and the ability to get data quickly, and I'm sure she has a range of parallels you can draw in your division or the domains and how it works at NZ Funds. But it's clear that whether in-house or whether you're running your own practice or part of a firm, that technology has transformed how accounting works and the speed of data, how it gets shared between different stakeholders. Take us through the biggest shifts. And Matt, I might start with you because I know this is a topic that you spend a lot of energy on.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, technology is a massive enabler in business, and it when a lot of people think of tech, they think of software and those kind of things, but it can be in improvements in equipment and machinery and those kind of things. So I guess when it comes to tech, most people think, oh, tech is a silver bullet. I'll put some tech in and then things are done. But I've always found that efficiency doesn't equal profitability. And so I think when it comes to tech, it's actually understanding how it should work next to the services that you're offering and delivering. It's not, tech is not the service, or it's not the silver bullet or the enabler. It's how are you working with tech to provide more insight to your clients or enable you to provide a better service. And, you know, and I guess in the accounting industry, the tech that we have had has really been a lot of back-end focused, being able to get the work done quicker and more efficiently and those kind of things. Whereas I think there's now a shift to more front-end focused tech. How do we engage with the client better? How do we make their life easier? How do we make it easy for them to interact with us? And I feel that when it comes to businesses that we're working with, the message is the same. And I think accountants have been lucky and been early adopters with tech, because the likes of Xero have kind of pushed that through onto us. So one, we've adopted it, and two, we're actually advising on. A lot of accountants, you'll probably find that half of their calls are related to some kind of tech piece in their business. So I think we're lucky as an industry, because we got an early start on that. And then with those skills and that expertise that we've gained from kind of working on our own businesses, we're then actually able to advise clients a lot better and say, well, what information do you have in your business? How easy is that to access? What insights is that giving you into what is going well, what's not going well? How do your customers engage with you? Just a lot of questions that they probably don't have the answers to, but with a good tech infrastructure, they can actually start to mine and get those insights to then hopefully deliver a better service or better client experience. But again, it's the tech isn't the silver bullet. It's there to work with an advisor or with a business to help them increase their offering. And again, you can become as efficient as you want, but that doesn't always translate into profitability. So I think it's really important that when it comes to tech, it's not just the tech itself. It's how you work with the tech, how you leverage off that to increase your service offering or your deliverables, and hopefully not see your margins dip or slip.
So Matt, a lot of it is, I guess, how you use your systems, how easily they integrate, how quickly you can get the information, which we touched on earlier. Are you starting to see any changes with AI and robotics and things like that? Anything with that with your clients?
Not that much, to be honest, yet. My interactions with AI, I start to see it filter into the applications that we use. So I think that's going to happen more and more often. Most people have heard of and had a play with ChatGPT these days. But I think the reality is that, you know, the tech curve goes like this in terms of the tech getting better, but the adoption curve is really, really slow. So I think a lot of businesses are slow to actually adopt the tech that is out there. And it becomes, I believe, more out of desperation than inspiration when it comes to adopting tech. It's, hey, we need to do this now because, you know, the way we're doing things is redundant. So we need to adopt this tech rather than organizations going, hey, we can really be proactive with what we're doing here. And there's some cool tech out there. Let's see how we can use it to improve our service offering or our product. So, and I think we're starting to kind of come over that expectation curve. You have a real peak and, hey, AI is going to change everything. And then it kind of comes crashing down to the reality of what's not actually going to be as fast as everybody anticipated. So that's my take on it. So I'm not seeing a lot happening at this stage, but it is the tech and the AI is starting to bleed into applications that people are using. And you probably have a small percentage that are at the front of the wave trying new things and different things to improve their business. But I still think that tech adoption curve is not going to change in a dramatic way.
As a profession, we've been quite patchy in our ability to adopt technology, and I think it's gone a lot slower, as you said, Matt, than I probably, even when I talked about 30 years ago, I thought what was coming over the hill. It's taken 30 years to get here. The other thing is one of the things that slows us down is fear. And you know, look, as a profession, we're number one on the hit list of professions going to be wiped out by AI. Well, that's what all the articles said, right? That's why kids stopped going and doing accounting at university, because there's no future in it. It's all over. That's not reality. And I quite often talk to people about the travel industry, and there's an industry that for a long time. And the technology is available that you can organise your holiday from the moment you walk out the door, and your transfers, your flights, your accommodation, your activities, everything. You can do that. So how come there's still a travel industry? It's because fundamentally people want to deal with people. People want to have a relationship. They want to be able to look you in the eye. They want to understand that you care about their particular circumstance, that you contextualize your specialist knowledge, that you can use the technology to make their life easier. You can de-risk it. But our clients are no different. And I think that all we should be thinking about as we look at the integration of AI into our businesses, and it's coming. You know, if you look, Xero is going to integrate it. Everybody's going to integrate it to some degree. We won't see a lot of it. It'll just be happening in the background, but it'll be there. Ultimately, the main focus for accounting professionals right now should be actually, how do I deepen my relationship with my clients? Because it's that relationship that actually is at the heart of the value proposition for the future of our profession. And yes, AI will come along and it'll probably change the shape of our firms a little bit. And you probably got a question on that a little bit later anyway. But ultimately, people want to do business with people. So we'd have to understand that it's a fundamental truth and work on that.
Yeah. Often with these things, technology change happens incrementally. A few firms adopt it, then it gets adopted by another firm and a couple of features, and then features broaden. One of the big shifts, I think, at least, and I assume this applies to accounting, it certainly applies to other professional services, is calls like this, video calls. And COVID foisted upon us. But if you were to actually step back and go, well, what percentage of calls now are done digitally compared to face-to-face? It's, you know, on average, meetings, probably 50% of meetings now are done, or at least in our firm. And client meetings might be a bit lower, but a large number. And so it's suddenly there and it's being used en masse, but we don't really think of it as a huge technological step forward because it occurred incrementally and then it...
I mean, COVID was amazing. I remember we, at Findex, had just basically signed off a 9-month project to roll out Microsoft Teams. Then COVID came and went to lockdown and we rolled it out in a week. That's the type of efficiency you get when you've got to do something quickly. Look, I think you're right, Stefan, but I would certainly counsel the way that we educate our young people it's really, really easy to sit behind email and use it as a medium, or text as a medium for communication. But actually, if we don't invest in communicating with our clients as human beings, we're doing ourselves a disservice. So I think video calls are great and they're efficient. I look at all the boards I sit on, and we do have some board meetings by video call, but I think it's the in-person calls that recharge the battery, or the in-person meetings that recharge the batteries, recharge the relationship battery, that allows us to do use the efficiency of video call. I think if all we did was video calls, then it'd be very hard to maintain relationships long term, and would do ourselves a disservice
I try to approach that, because we are a relationship based industry. It's hands down, that's what we do. Clients, you mentioned that Westpac consider accountants the most trusted advisor. I've definitely seen that stat down on another survey, so I was actually quite a nice surprise to see that. But I always think with the way that we use tech in the business is that we want to increase the level of support and engagement with our client without increasing the effort. So, you know, a great example in our business is we did an innovation with our tax letter. So our tax letter goes out, and they've been fairly stock standard in the industry for a long time, which is just some text. This is what you have to pay. But our tax letter goes out, it's got a video which explains to the client what this is, what they need to do, how it's been calculated. So he tells them the tax that they've got to pay, but then there's a button in the email that says, hey, if you've got any questions, click here, and they can book straight into a meeting with one of the team members. So rather than the team member going, okay, I need to keep my mind across all of these people's tax, we're actually using the tech to help them self-serve. And when a client has a problem or an issue, they can get in touch with someone like that. So we amplify that level of service, in my opinion, without increasing the effort from the human. And that's how I see tech and people working together, because like Scott said, we are a relationship-based business. But to manage all the relationships that we have in our minds, etc., or on a spreadsheet is almost impossible to do. So then having your tech and your systems in working in such a way that helps your customer engage with you, or you're at their fingertips when you're needed, is something that is a real enabler with tech. But if you don't have the right communication and soft skills to help that client navigate the problem or challenge that they're facing, then it's like, well, it becomes worthless. So I definitely think that, to echo Scott's sentiment, that how you are able to help clients understand the challenges that they're having in their businesses, whether it's tax or profit, etc., really having that human connection is critical to the success of the accounting industry.
One of the things I really liked about that story, other than putting the customer at the center of that, is in all likelihood they're going to be talking to one of your team members. And I've always had a view that one of the challenges for particularly people at partner level is they think they have to be all things to their clients and the only point of contact. And the evolved practice is where actually the client understands that if they've got something strategic or big ticket, they give Matt a call. If they've got something that is around prov tax or GST, they give Jocelyn a call. Or if they've got something, even something, give someone else a call. And whilst that's brilliant for the customer because they feel empowered to do that, from a practice perspective, it means that they have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 contact points in your business, which makes the relationship so much more sticky, and therefore much more valuable in the long term.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because we had some great feedback from clients at one stage saying that, hey, we're not sure who we need to deal with at some stage because they're getting contacted from this person and by this person and by this person. And so what we did was we stepped back and we said, well, let's define what our relationship should look like with our clients. And we're like, okay, well, each client gets 3 team members. Principal, as you say, to handle the strategic high-level stuff. a manager with your day-to-day accounting queries, and then a client service coordinator who's an administrator, getting information to and from you. And so we define that relationship, and then we build that into our systems and our process. We educate our clients. And you're right, when all of a sudden the client can cut into your team and say, well, there's three people and four people here that I work with on a regular basis, especially if one of them leaves, well, they still have a relationship with two or three others. And so they do become a lot stickier, more so to the people, but hopefully what that brand represents as well.
Yeah, at NZ Funds, we I couldn't agree more that the face-to-face relationships are the heart of a connection with the client, and then you can build something from that which is enduring. So tech should support and enhance that, but it won't replace it over the long run. That point you made about sending out the email and then it triggering, that's an example of front-end development that you mentioned a little bit earlier, right? Are there other examples you can think of where the potential is yet to be realized across the industry?
In my mind, it's the industry's ripe for that kind of development. And I think where a client moves from firm to firm, expecting a different level of service, they probably get the same, really. And I think this is where accounting firms are going to be able to differentiate themselves. The way that they manage that client journey and that client experience will be the standout. And to be honest, I believe you can build margin in that as well. You know, the outputs arguably will be the same in terms of what the deliverables are to the client, but the experience and the journey with the client working with your business, you can really load on a premium if you've taken the time to consider that and how you can make their life easier. So, you know, in terms of examples, I've got a handful that in terms of the way we do it at DVA, but a lot of it is around trying to make our clients' life easier and engage with us in an easy way, and not having anything slip through the cracks is kind of the lens that we look through when we're developing our services and improving that front end.
Yeah. Okay. Scott, you mentioned earlier this the challenge of attracting people to the profession, and I think technology has been the hot place to be for people looking at university and deciding where to go with their careers over the last, probably particularly the last decade or so, but maybe a bit longer, and that applies to a range of professions. And it gets expressed as a battle for talent now, where firms are out-competing each other to attract talent and build, a career pathway for graduates, but not just graduates, people with transferable skills too. How is it real? It's probably the first question. And is it different from what it was 20 years ago? And what do you think is really underlying?
I'm glad we've got another hour and a half to cover this topic off. So look, is it real? Yes, it is. And there's quite a few causes for it, I think. And I know it's an issue at the very centre of what Chartered Accountants Australia and New Zealand are looking at, and under the leadership of Peter Vile and his team, trying to broaden the pathways for people coming into the profession. So, there's an old saying that at the heart of every stereotype there's a truth. And before we got on this call, we were sharing, the typical accountant joke around going to parties and those sorts of things, clearing the room. And, why is that in existence, and why does that sit there and put people off the profession? It's because for a very long time in New Zealand, the only pathway materially has been you're good at maths at school, you go to university, you do an accounting degree because the careers advisor said you're good at maths, you go do accounting. You do that accounting degree. Everybody does pretty much exactly the same accounting degree. Then you go out and you go into a firm. You get pumped through the CANS process or institute process as it may have been at the time, which is exactly the same. And then we sit there and go, wow, everybody looks the same. How did that happen? Whereas everybody's come through the same sausage factory. And we haven't really thought about the consequences of that. Other models in other places. When I was in the UK, I had a team of 9 graduates working with me. Only one of them had done an accounting degree. And we had arts history, we had chemistry, we had all sorts of backgrounds. And then we brought them into the firm, we taught them how to be accountants. And that brought this sort of diversity and vibrancy into the profession. And that's something that I think that we need to be looking at right now, because that traditional pathway isn't working. People do read the articles that say that AI is going to wipe out the accounting industry, so why it's even viable. Career advisors, you know, bless their cotton socks, take a very sort of light touch view of the world, and so they hear this, so they recommend people don't do it. So we've got to do things differently. But if we also look at it the other side in terms of the type of service we're providing to our clients, we need a greater variety of people. And it may well be that the structure and of our business is also going to change, that we're actually going to need less graduates because technology and AI is just another step in technology. It's nothing special in many regards. It's probably accelerating. We'll do that. So we're going to end up looking at sort of horizontal recruitment in a much greater degree going forward. So that does give us the opportunity as a profession to think a little bit broader around the kind of perspectives we can bring in, and we can train people to give that sort of good commercial advice. But hopefully they're also bringing stuff from other experiences. So I think all that sort of boils up to the industry is actually about to go through a significant amount of change in terms of how we source people, at what stage we source them, and the nature of the people we source. Because, you know, I mean, my daughter's a fantastic mathematician, as we talked about beforehand. But being a fantastic mathematician doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a great accountant.
So, Scott, we've talked a lot this morning about our profession becoming much more relationship-based, much more people-based. So I think you're really touching on you do need people with really good people skills too. Are there any tools that you've used or any things you're doing that have actually helped you attract talent?
Funny enough, less tools. I mean, certainly a whole lot of psychometric testing and all those sorts of things, and putting them in social environments and trying to work out who can have a conversation and who can't. And sometimes that's a wee bit unfair because maybe they've just not been put in that environment in the past. But I think it is actively working with your people right from the moment they walk in the door and spend time, drag them along to meetings. And I have a view that if you're a graduate of my team, you get to go to meetings. You may not say anything, you may not do anything, you might even just take a note sometimes. And then in your third or fourth meeting, we'll agree beforehand, you might get to say something. It's the experiences that actually grow you. And it's incumbent on those of us in the profession who are a little bit older, or much older, as I found out today, to spend the time to help our people develop those skills. I've always had a view that a gregarious B-grade student is probably going to be more successful than a insular A-plus student in our profession. I think there's a moment in time where they cross over in their career paths if they're both supported. But we also need a mix, you know. Certainly, I come from a tax consulting perspective, and I've got some absolutely brilliant people working for me who actually have no interest in dealing with clients or staff. They just want to be brilliant tax people. What I need to do is have a business that's big enough to allow them to do what they love doing, which is tax work.
Yeah, I think it's really an interesting space to be in now, because Scott's right. There was kind of this process, and then you're an accountant. Was at our organisation, the way that we try to attract and retain talent is we have a clear purpose why our business exists. So we're trying to talk to the heart, you know, win the hearts and minds of our team. And we have a value set that we live into. And when we do our recruiting, it's around, hey, these are our core values. This is what is important to us to be a team member of DVA. Can you tell us what they mean to you and how you might see them in action? And we're also very open with our strategic goals. So we have a 5-year strategic plan that we work to, and we roll over every 5 years, and we're open with that with the team so that they can see in terms of their career path, the opportunities for them as our business moves towards our strategic vision. So, you know, our purpose at DVA is creating successful business journeys? And that's not just for our clients, that's for our team as well. What's a successful business journey like for you? Do you want to move into advisory? Do you want to move into client relationships? Or do you want to be the technical expert that just gets the technical work done and then passes that on to someone else to inform the client? So I think it's really important that as a practitioner in a firm, your values and your culture underpin how you operate as a business, and then attracting and retaining talent, people can say, well, that aligns with who I am as a person, who I want to be in my career. And it's been a real success for us. Two ways. One, finding the right team members, but two, bouncing out the team members that it doesn't align with. You know, they come in and they go, actually, this is not the right place for me. And it's like, well, at least it's clearly defined, rather than people feeling, oh, I'm just not sure what's going on here. It's like, well, actually, you know, loyalty, a two-way street of trust and respect doesn't resonate with me, so I'm out. You know, so that's the way that we are, I guess, battling for talent. But it works very well, and it's great as a leader, because it's not you trying to manage everybody. It's kind of you waving the flag and saying, this is what we're about, this is where we're going. And then if you've got good team members, they get on board and come with you on that,
Matt,
that
journey. I think that absolutely nailed it. I totally agree with that approach. It's not about right way or wrong way, it's our way. And it's about transparency and openness and awareness of what that is, and then actually empowering people to make those choices, you know, whether it's graduate level, manager level, whatever level you're recruiting, is going, this is who we are, this is how we operate. If this resonates with you, then let's have a conversation. If it doesn't, it doesn't mean that you're a bad person or anything. All it means is that maybe this is not the place for you. And I know at times I've talked about our business, you know, I run very, very shallow teams, very little hierarchy. And, you know, I often say to people, and it's just the way we operate. It means that from day one, I've got expectations about what you're going to be able to do. And but the downside of this structure is there's nowhere to hide. And if you want to come into an organization when you're given the opportunity to go to client meetings from day one and to learn in a supportive environment and those sorts of things, then this could be great. If that's not what you're about, then don't come. It's okay. There's plenty of other places that operate on a different basis, and we wish you well. But we want a long-term relationship. We don't want a relationship that's going to be miserable for you and miserable for us in 6 or 12 or 24 months. So I think your transparency around your values and your business ethos is absolutely brilliant.
The other thing that that really stood out to me, Scott, was just when you were talking a little bit about the apprenticeship mindset and all mentoring, I don't know how you frame it, but that's what came through earlier, where you obviously really believe in an obligation on more senior accountants to bring up and build up people within the team, which seems to be the UK model more than it is New Zealand.
Well, look, I think there's a funny thing in our industry, maybe it's all professions, is that being a partner or a principal or something like that is like, a goal, not a goal, is an endpoint, is the objective. Whereas a very wise person said to me quite early in my career is, Scott, you've got to understand that we're merely custodians in this business. So whilst we're in this business, we'll do well, and so we should. But our primary focus should be getting the business ready for the next generation and getting the next generation ready for the business. And if you just focus on those two things, everything else takes care of itself. And that spoke to me at the time. And that goes to the heart of, ultimately, you want people aligned who work hard and whilst you're there. But you also got to ensure that they've got that pathway, that once you're not there, they've got their opportunity to have their moment in the sun. And again, I think that takes transparency and conversation. And I've always had quite open conversations with people in my team around, I expect you to work hard. I expect you to do great things. But also, this is going to be yours one day. So you're really doing it for yourself.
What an awesome moment to close on. Matt, Scott, Andrea, thank you so much for your time. It's been fantastic having you both here. You haven't killed our party as accountants, quite the opposite. So have a great week, and I'm sure we'll be in touch again soon.
Thank you. Well, thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Stefan. Thanks, Andrea. Thanks for having us.
Okay. Thanks all.
New Zealand Funds Management Limited is the issuer of the NZ Funds Active Income Series, NZ Funds Active Inflation Series and NZ Funds Active Growth Series, together the NZ Funds Active Series, as well as the NZ Funds KiwiSaver Scheme, the NZ Funds Managed Superannuation Service, NZ Funds Wealth Builder and NZ Funds Income Generator. For further information or to request a copy of the product disclosure statement for each of these, please contact NZ Funds or visit nzfunds.co.nz. This recording is provided for information purposes only. The information provided is not intended as a substitute for specific professional advice on investments, financial planning, or any other matter. Past performance is not an indication of future returns.